This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Zoning law isn't necessarily the easiest language to understand, and it might not always seem like it affects where you live. But one day you may find yourself wondering why big changes are coming to your town, some new building project, for instance, and you may ask yourself, how did we get here? And since we rarely mention zoning without talking about its cousin planning, we'll talk about how these two core functions of municipal life work together. Today we'll dive into some of the latest zoning issues to make headlines in Connecticut. There are possible changes coming to Satan's Kingdom out in New Hartford and Canton. There's a big stadium development coming to the new Dono area of Hartford. We'll also talk about one Hartford home that got a lot of attention for having too many people under its roof. You can join us, 860-275-7266. What's the role of zoning where you live? Are there any big issues happening right now in your town or city? 860-275-7266. Comment at our website, WNPR.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. First, in Hamden, Quinnipiac University announced that it paid the town $1.23 million as payment in lieu of taxes. Earlier in the week, the town was fining the school $150 a day for violating a housing agreement. The town and the school have been talking about how to coexist. It hinges an awful lot on zoning. So we're joined first by Fred Nevin, who's publisher of the Hamden Community News at qvtimes.net. Fred, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, let's explain a little bit about what happened just yesterday. We see a picture of the town of Hamden getting a big old check from Quinnipiac University. What's that all about?
Well, the a few months ago, the town and the university were supposed to sign a memorandum of understanding in which there were a lot of things in it, but basically they were going to try to work together closely. And part of that understanding was that Quinnipiac was, on a voluntary basis, going to give Hamden a check for $1.2 million to help the town cover the cost of police, fire, and other services that it provides to the university during the year. And that was fine up until a recent Planning and Zoning Commission meeting in which the town planner introduced a proposal to require Quinnipiac to provide a five-year master plan. That angered Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac didn't want it and threatened that if that was put in place, that it would renege on the $1.2 million payment. What happened since then is that the town withdrew that proposal because after a ruling by an outside attorney that it probably wouldn't stand up in the court of law, they decided to withdraw it and rework the thing, and I've been told that they're going to reintroduce it at some point. Meanwhile, Quinnipiac is pretty much being criticized in the press for reneging on making the payment and then coming across as apparently wanting zoning and favors when they go to the board. And I guess, the whole thing came down to whether or not the school was doing this as a payoff to the town to be able to get what it wants of planning and zoning.
Let's talk about that relationship between Quinnipiac and the town. For people who don't know Hamden, Quinnipiac University has been rapidly expanding, both on their main campus but also in other campuses around the area. There's been disputes over various properties that are right along the main drag through Hamden there, and also for student housing. I mean, what's the relationship right now, Fred, between the town of Hamden and Quinnipiac University?
Well, at the moment, it's pretty contentious. It seems that Quinnipiac wants to do things the way it wants to do it, and the town wants them to follow the zoning laws. And Quinnipiac seems to have a habit of not wanting to do that. So I would say that it's not terrible, but it's really not a good situation. And any little thing seems to be able to blow it up.
I want to bring into the conversation Fanula Darby-Hudgens, who's an educational assistant at Three Rivers Community College in New London. She's a Norwich resident. She's somebody who studies zoning law very, very closely. She'll be my spirit guide through the zoning world today. Fanula, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John.
You know, when we hear a story like this about Quinnipiac maybe not following town zoning laws, it turns into this big dispute, and it's an awful lot of money. Quinnipiac University says, we bring an awful lot to the community of Hamden and to the surrounding region. We should maybe be treated slightly differently. The town says, well, look, too much untaxable property. All of a sudden, it's hard for us to pay our cops and our fire people. Is this the sort of dispute that we see really not just in Hamden but all over the state of Connecticut?
I would definitely say so. And really one of the reasons for that is the complete and utter lack of consistency across zoning across the state. And so every single municipality is going to have these nuanced struggles because there is no general state guidelines to sort of say, hey, Hamden, this is how you should deal with a large institution of higher education. Large institution of higher education, this is how you should be a friendly neighbor to your town. And there just is zero consistency or guidelines to provide either party.
Of course, there's an awful lot in Connecticut law that's inconsistent, and it has a lot to do with the fact that each one of these municipalities has their own set of laws. I mean, is it realistic to think that there's going to be some state guidelines to say, here's how each town is going to deal with their town gown issues, for instance?
Realistic, maybe. I'm hopeful for it at some point. You know, it was a recommendation given by the Impediments of Fair Housing Task Force to develop, you know, model zoning regulations. And that was recommended by them. And I think if we are going to regulate planning and zoning to promote fairness and equality, then there has to be some sort of order. And I'm not saying it has to be this cookie cutter across the entire state, but perhaps we can start thinking about town size or population or as we develop models.
Fred, before I let you go, what happens next in this dispute? So there's been a little bit of a payoff here. What happens next between Quinnipiac and the town of Hamden and their zoning disputes?
Well, on March 17th, the Zoning Board of Appeals is supposed to hear Quinnipiac appeal this $150 a day fine that's been set concerning the breaking of an agreement on how many dorm spaces they would have for students. The school in 2006 agreed to have a dorm room for everyone on campus, and is now trying to say that they have a dorm space available for everyone who wants one. And the town is saying, no, that's not really what we agreed to. It was that you'd have one for everyone in the university.
And the important thing there is if you have a dorm room for everyone on campus, then they're not out in the community taking those houses that people might want to be renting or buying at market rate. Fred, thank you so much for telling us a little bit of the story. I really appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Fred Nevin is publisher of the Hamden Community News. You can find them at qvtimes.net. You were just nodding your head, Fanula, before we go on. And that is a really big dispute. I mean, if the school says, well, we're going to have enough room for all of the students to live on campus, that really does have a very different impact on the way in which we zone, the way in which we think about the community surrounding the college.
That was exactly why I was shaking my head, John. You know, it's this idea of if we don't plan for housing for the people who use the community, then what are we planning housing for? So it's this idea that if you had students and faculty and staff and workers of Quinnipiac University who had housing available to them in Hamden, wouldn't that create this sort of utopia of locality, you know, reduce commuting, community investment, but without it, to segregate them within their college campus and not permit them town use, you're going to build walls.
Now, utopia. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Well, let's head out to my neck of the woods. Literally, I drive through a part of Canton in New Hartford that's charmingly called Satan's Kingdom every day. It's situated above a bend in the Farmington River and right on the town border between the towns. It's been the subject of heated speculation over a land development there. We're joined next by Ken Byron, who's a reporter for the Hartford Current, who's been covering it. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
I'm good this morning, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. So give us an update. We've been hearing about this dispute over using Satan's Kingdom to build a housing development for some time. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is this. Mr. Borghese was seeking to develop lands, as you said, in New Hartford in Canton, and he is moving ahead with industrial development on the New Hartford portion of that parcel. That's about 18 acres, and he said in January that he plans on starting to develop two lots in that New Hartford property for some sort of industrial development. He was seeking to get a similar plan in place for the adjoining parcel in Canton, and he has backed away from that. He faced tremendous opposition in both towns, but even more opposition in Canton. When he presented his plans for an industrial park in the Canton portion back in the fall, the high school auditorium was filled with residents who were very opposed to it. Virtually everyone who spoke was opposed to what he wanted to do, and he withdrew the plan very shortly after that public hearing, and it never his application never went forward to a full vote by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And he has come back in the last month or so with a 9-lot residential subdivision there, proposing to do what the existing zoning regulations would allow him to do. So the industrial park proposal is off the table in Canton at this point, and it doesn't appear that it will be coming back.
So essentially now the plan is scaled back to something that zoning law would allow, but what do you think happens next? Are there still concerns in the towns about this happening, or does this essentially now get a green light?
Well, the resident, if people's concerns don't seem that very high about a residential subdivision. The Planning and Zoning Commission informally reviewed it back in January, and they seemed very supportive of what Mr. Borghese wanted to do. And one of the points that was made at the meeting was that he's essentially, if he goes through and seeks permission to do what he says he wants to do, that will comply with the town's residential zoning regulations, and they would have to give him those 9 lots anyway. So, but I think I think this issue has calmed down quite a bit in the last month or so. I think especially now that the industrial park proposal is off the table in Canton, that seems to have calmed people down quite a bit.
And it's calmed people down about some of the environmental concerns. Literally, this is in sort of a wild and scenic area right above the Farmington River. It's a place where people go tubing and kayaking, and that was some of the concerns around an industrial park. Less so now, it seems, because, some housing lots might be built there.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think the other concern one of the biggest concerns that was raised at hearings was you're talking about a residential area, a very lightly developed residential area, and frankly a very scenic stretch of Route 44. And many people who spoke at these meetings simply said that an industrial park is completely incompatible and out of character with the area, and they just did not want to see something like that there. And that is now off the table. I think people were much more comfortable with a residential subdivision. Some people obviously don't want to see that land developed at all, but they also recognize that's not necessarily very realistic. And people said that, you know, if it has to be built on, they would much rather see houses there.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to see if you can actually get a zip code for Satan's Kingdom. That might be a very desirable address. I like the idea, Ken, you know, living in Satan's Kingdom. Maybe it'll make the home prices go up a little bit. Ken Byron's a reporter for the Hartford Courant. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, John.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. We're talking about planning and zoning and how it affects you in your community here. Fionnuala Darby-Hudgens is an educational assistant at Three Rivers Community College who studies this stuff statewide, and she joins us. I also want to bring in Sarah Bronin, who's the Planning and Zoning Commission Chair for the City of Hartford. She's also a law professor at the University of Connecticut. Thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks, John.
Just before we get to some phone calls, and we do have some people with some questions and some ideas, tell us a little bit about what this entire world kind of means to you. I mean, obviously you get involved in planning and zoning because you're civically minded, because you care about your community, but what about this whole world is something you might want to explain to people who don't really understand much about P&Z?
Sure. So I can explain what our commission does. And we look to the future. We try to write the rules for the city of the future. We also deal with the comprehensive plan for the city and make recommendations on that. And finally, we make recommendations to the city council and to the mayor's office about specific development projects. So what I've tried to focus on, I'm a law professor at UConn. I'm an architect. I really care about the way our city develops. I've been, back in 2007 on the Historic Properties Commission. So this is a different angle for me now. But what I want to do is look at how we bring Hartford into the 21st century. And our commission, since I've been the chair, has been very active in trying to update our zoning regulations, make some parts of them that are not legal, and also look to the future. My students, I've also brought in my students at UConn Law School, and with them and with other commissioners and with the neighborhoods, we're developing a variety of proposals. On the table for April, hopefully, will be some proposals on renewable energy, solar and wind, urban agriculture, green roofs, low-impact development, and bicycle parking. And together, that package of reforms will move us not just to the bare minimum standards that Hartford needs to be sufficient as a zoning entity, but I think it'll help us to look to the future and make Hartford green and sustainable.
Fanula, before I break, though, I want to put that question to you, this idea of looking to the future, because often when we talk about zoning disputes, we're not really talking about communities comprehensively looking at what we want to be 10 years from now or 20 years from now. Often it's because some developer wants to build a house on a property or because somebody wants to build an industrial park along a scenic part of the river. It seems as though there's a tension there between the need and the desire to plan for the future in a mindful way and individual opportunistic actors, you know, acting within their own rights to try to do something right now that we have to respond to. Tell us about that tension a little bit.
So I was really actually thinking about this last night, and I was thinking in my head, is zoning only reactionary? Are we only bringing it to the table as a result of, as you said, an opportunistic developer, you know, coming to the table, questioning a zoning ordinance, and so then we act in a very reactionary manner and just blanket make some sort of zoning law to go against what this guy wants because it's not in line with the character of the town? So I do completely agree that zoning should be written to sort of plan for the 21st century. However, maybe not, because was that the intention of zoning when it was designed, when it was given, when state power gave it to municipalities in 1923? I mean, wasn't the intention of zoning to just protect the residents, not necessarily plan for future
And protect the residents who are here today? Could you just comment on that quickly, Sarah, because it is an interesting point.
Sure. The initial purpose of zoning was to separate uses from each other. And the trend in zoning now, and actually the city had hired a consultant to look at a form-based code for us. The trend in cities now is to move away from the issues of uses and think more about the forms. On top of that, you know, again, there's a move toward making cities greener. So what zoning was in the 1920s is not necessarily what it is today, because we've developed and the law has developed. Urban thinking has developed, best practices have developed, and I think it's time for Hartford to adopt some of those.
And we're going to be talking more about a big Hartford development in just a moment and what some city residents think about it. I want to quickly get to Stephen in Middletown. You can join us, by the way, at 860-275-7266 to talk about the impact of planning and zoning in your town. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. I wanted to give my perspective on who the commissioners are, because who is elected, who is making these decisions about writing the zoning code, changing the zoning code, and ruling on specific applications. And I just wanted to express a concern that in my city, and I suspect in many cities, the path to becoming a planning and zoning commissioner is much more frequently through loyalty to the insider political machine, to the mayor, to the council, than it is it's much more likely to get on the ballot in that manner than through a genuine interest, as Ms. Bronin has, for urban planning and architectural and land use. And I just wanted to express my dismay that so many of our decisions are made by for political reasons rather than for land use, best practices in land use.
Stephen, thank you very much for the point. Sarah, quickly.
Yeah, so the city of Hartford, some places in Connecticut have elected commissioners. Some places have appointed commissioners. In Hartford, they're appointed. But we've also added a local rule that says that those commissioners have to have expertise in planning, architecture, real estate, or law. I think it's knowledge or skills is the way that the wording puts it. And I think that helps. You know, when that's put into practice, I think that helps to make a commission function as the independent commission that it should be.
We're talking today with Sarah Bronin, who's the commission chair for Hartford Planning and Zoning. She's also a law professor and architect. We're joined by Fionnuala Darby-Hudgens, who's an educational assistant at Three Rivers Community College, who studies zoning statewide. When we come back from our break, we'll be taking more of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. We're also going to be bringing in a Hartford resident who's been writing about one of the things that happens often when a city looks to the future with its planning and zoning laws. It's that G word, gentrification. What happens when we're making decisions for the city of Hartford? You can join us, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about planning and zoning in Connecticut cities and towns. How well do you know your town's zoning laws? Do you know what makes it so important to development decisions? You can call us at 860-275-7266. We'll get to some more of your calls in just a moment. We're joined in studio by a few guests, including Fionnuala Darby-Hudgens, who is helping us through the ideas of zoning and planning across Connecticut. She studied the Connecticut zoning laws in all the towns. Sarah Bronin's here. She's Hartford Planning and Zoning Commission Chair. She's also a law professor at UConn. I want to bring into the conversation Jamil Ragland. He's office coordinator at Trinity College. He's a Hartford resident, and he's written extensively about issues surrounding development in the city of Hartford, and something that we probably need to get to when we talk about planning and zoning. It's the word gentrification. Jamil, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming in. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me, John.
So I'm wondering, first of all, if you can just lay out a little bit of the argument that you are making on your blog. You're talking about the development that's coming to downtown Hartford. It's called the Dono area. It's sort of a new designation for essentially a few parcels of land that are north of the I-84 corridor. It's the south part of the north end of Hartford. And the north end of Hartford has long been, for people who don't know the area, economically disadvantaged. It's been cut off from the rest of the city. There's been a lot of people talking about how to help make the north end more prosperous. When you see a big decision to bring in a baseball stadium, mixed-use development, retail, and all the things that now the city is talking about, as a Hartford resident, what do you see?
Well, what I see when I see the baseball stadium in particular is that this is a development that is targeted towards a certain demographic for a certain demographic of people. And I'm not convinced that that demographic represents the actual demographic of the city. What gets lost in this conversation about the baseball stadium a lot is that there was also a competing plan for development of that exact parcel where the stadium is going now. It was put forward by Rex Fowler and the Hartford Loan Foundation that was going to develop that parcel of land into a grocery store, mixed-use housing, mixed-use. It was going to be a mixed-use development there as well. And around the time that the stadium was announced, this plan was really coming forward and about to be made public. And after the stadium was announced, the plan collapsed, and the plan was published in the Hartford Courant about a week after the stadium was announced. So we had these two competing ideas for development for this area. One was a shopping center based around a more moderate income people. I believe it was going to be a ShopRite, and the mixed use was going to be based around that grocery store. There was going to be a housing component. There was going to be shopping components. But all of these things that were going to be developed with the idea that we have a moderate income community here, and we need to develop in a way that reflects the nature of the community that's going to be a part of. At the same time, we have this baseball stadium, and the baseball stadium is an entertainment venue. What's coming with the baseball stadium is Thomas Hooker Brewery, another entertainment venue. These type of more high-end types of entertainment, there's more high-end uses of this land, that the type of development that's coming to there is not going to be the same type of moderate income development that we've already seen reports from the developers that are talking about building housing, that they'll try to put in some low-income, moderate-income housing if they can find the funding. But if they don't find it, they're going ahead anyways. And they feel brave enough to say that we're not going to respect the city in their request that we have low- and moderate-income housing if we can't find the money for it. They feel like they can say that publicly and still get this thing built.
How much of your concerns about this are about the development itself that very well will be coming to this area? And how much of it is about the conversation that, whether it's the city or the developers, are having with the community? Because as we've been hearing earlier, and we're going to be talking more about, what planning and zoning really are all about is trying to figure out what's best for the community, really planning for the community. Do you feel like the community, specifically the community that lives in the north end of Hartford, has been heard in some of these conversations?
I don't think so. And I went to a few community meetings last summer about the stadium. There was one held in the north end on Main Street at a community center. There were a few held in downtown Hartford at various city council meetings. And I felt like the impression that I always got at these meetings was that there was very vocal and very organized opposition to the development I was put forward. And the city did respond in some ways. There have been all sorts of jumping through hoops to try to find different ways to finance this that won't upset people. There have been some concessions in terms of how the development is going forward. But the main thrust of the idea is still that this is development based on entertainment first for people to come into the city to spend money, as opposed to meeting the needs of people in the community. And we keep hearing now that there's going to be a grocery store that's going to be attached to this development. But what kind of grocery store? Are we really going to expect a ShopRite to be placed next to a baseball stadium, next to a craft brewer? Are we going to get something along the lines of a Whole Foods, a Trader Joe's, the types of things that don't reflect what is needed in the community of people who don't have access to the resources to pay that kind of money for food?
I'm wondering, Sarah, can you address some of those concerns? Because I want to get to some of the actual zoning issues around this baseball stadium development. But I'd like you to just respond a little bit to what Jamil's talking about residents of this area that are most closely affected by a development like this maybe feeling like, you know, you're not necessarily listening to us. You're not necessarily looking for our needs here as you plan for the future.
Yeah, so our Planning and Zoning Commission felt that during the public hearings, and in fact, many commissioners said the same thing. The percentage of affordable housing is not something that we control. So what we were trying to do in saying that we feel like that's an issue is sending the message back to those who do control that, do control the percentage of affordable housing, whether it's the developers themselves or city legislators. To let them know that we think this is an issue. As far as the stadium approvals process itself, the Planning and Zoning Commission did exercise its role, I think, in the process early on by saying that when the City Council asked us for advice, we said that it wasn't consistent with the comprehensive plan. But then as the project moved forward, we also felt, despite our saying that early on and the City Council overruling us, which they're well within their rights to do, that because the will of the people is expressed through the legislators, that we then had to figure out a way that we would be comfortable with the with approving the development in a downtown area.
So essentially saying you and your commission said it didn't fall within the guidelines of the earlier plan. The commission overrules you. They're the legislators in this. They're the ones who represent the will of the people. So essentially you've got to figure out a way to work with what they wanted to do.
So we've tried to play our role in the process, and so part of that is developing pretty stringent guidelines as to how the stadium could be built. We reviewed the whole project, and I think we made it better in terms of accessibility, in terms of its design, in terms of the way that it fronts the streets that would be most used by people traveling between downtown and North Hartford and other neighborhoods. So I hope in our series of reviews, maybe 6 months of meetings for us, we made the design better, even when initially we were skeptical about its suitability for the plan.
I have a quick phone call here. Tom Deller is calling us up. He's director of development for the City of Hartford, and I wanted to bring him on to talk a little bit about this. Tom, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, John. Thank you.
How much affordable housing is going to be part of this downtown north development?
Well, I think the issue with affordable housing is how you pay for it, and we are attempting to get at least 20% of the housing affordable. We're working with the developers to seek the initial funding necessary to underwrite the cost of that housing so we can get it there.
Fanula, very quickly, what are the rules around affordable housing in the state? Because this is something that it comes up all the time in cities and towns, but how much affordable housing is going to be part of any new development? What are the statewide rules for this, and what do different communities do, Fanula?
Okay, so I actually want to challenge Sarah on something when she said that zoning is not responsible for the percentage of affordable housing available in a town, when in fact zoning can write affordable housing regulations that are attractive to developers. And just some quick facts, just to bring our readers or listeners up to speed, 57% of our state's towns don't have any affordable housing regulations in their zoning. So complete ignorance of this issue that it's a requirement. The state requires that municipalities have 10% affordable housing, so out of their housing stock, 10% is made affordable. However, it is a regulation that is met with mixed success.
Mm. Sarah, quickly, and then Tom, go ahead.
Yep. Sure. What I was saying was that Hartford has not written those rules. And so if we don't have the authority to do that within Hartford, then we can't make requirements on developers. So, yes, in other towns they do, but in Hartford we don't.
Tom Dillon?
Let me build on what Sarah just said. We right now have 40% of our housing stock is restricted affordable housing in perpetuity. So 40% of the housing units in this city are restricted. What we've been doing is, as we study the city, we've been identifying the neighborhoods that don't meet that don't have affordable housing or have less affordable housing. And what we're trying to do is we are setting an internal planning goal that each neighborhood should have at least 20% of its housing affordable. And so in downtown, that's our goal. It is difficult to meet that because of the limitation of funding to bring in affordable housing. And there's different kinds of affordability. There's, so it depends on the type of development. It depends on the level of affordability you're trying to get in there and the type of restriction that you're going to be placing on that property to keep it affordable in perpetuity.
Jamil?
Right. And I want to speak to that point directly, actually, that in terms of affordability, some of the affordability doesn't seem so affordable. One of the new development at 777 Main Street, that some of those apartments have been set aside as affordable, but affordable in that context means about $740 for a studio apartment. And who does that actually reflect affordability towards? And that's on top of that would be a garage fee, those types of things. So you're starting to look at $800 plus rent for a studio, and that's actually characterized as affordable housing in a development where other apartments are going for $1,000 plus. That may be below what's going on with the other apartments in that development, but that hardly seems affordable for residents in the city that has been characterized as the second poorest city in the nation.
Tom, could you just address what we mean by affordability? Well, as Jamil talks about it, $800 for a studio apartment does sound like a lot more than a lot of people in the city of Hartford could probably afford.
I think that there are different, as I said earlier, there are different levels of affordability, and different programs bring you to different levels. So what's happening in 777 Main Street is what they call workforce housing, and they have an income range of 80 to 100% of the average median income of the area. What people think of when they think really affordable housing, they're usually thinking of families that make 60% or less of the area median income, and usually that takes a far deeper subsidy to make those units available. There are not a lot of programs these days that help families do that. And so we struggle with, can we project-based Section 8 vouchers to get people into certain developments? Can we get unit sizes built to meet the family needs, the size of the certain kinds of families that may be looking at it? So affordability has many different levels. Funding that comes with it establishes that level that they are supposed to be developed for. And 777 Main Street is what they call workforce affordability. So that's 80 to 100% AMI, and that's how they generated that rent number.
Sarah Bronin, before we leave this topic, I'm just wondering, as you and your commission think about the future of the city of Hartford, talk about this piece of this. I mean, how do you view long-term the idea of affordable housing, where that might go, how we develop in a way that allows some of the investments that are being made in the city to be open to as many people from the city and outside the city as possible?
We don't have that many. I mean, we have some large developable sites in Hartford, and so Downtown North is one of those sites where this question might come into play. So I guess, as Tom is doing his study, so Tom Deller is the staff to our commission, and they take their initiatives and they do studies on their own. They're doing this housing study, and we'll see what that produces. And then as we think about these large scale developments of the future, we'll think about how to incorporate any recommendations that they have. But again, currently that's not something that's in our purview as the Planning and Zoning Commission. So that's something that I'll, right now I'll leave to the staff.
And this may be semantics, but I'll just ask, is there a substantive difference between this part of town, which has always been considered part of the north end of Hartford, north of I-84, now being considered Downtown North, that there's something different about the downtown region versus the north end of Hartford?
You mean just in terms of geography?
In terms of the way it's zoned, in terms of the what we might be able to build there?
Certainly. So downtown is built zoned very densely. So in fact, you have to have a minimum number of stories of three there, and the maximum is 10. But you can get around that by putting public amenities in your building, and you can build beyond that. In North Hartford, it has a variety of different zones depending on where you are. Blue Hills is a single-family zone. That's up in the northwest part of Hartford. Directly north of downtown, Clay Arsenal, northeast, those neighborhoods are primarily two-, three-family and mixed use, but low density and not like downtown. So in terms of zoning, they're thought of in different ways completely.
And I'm just wondering before we leave the topic, Jamil, about that, because the idea of what an area is being called and how we view it, I think actually has a lot to do with a question like this. To be frank, many people from the city have said to me, look, this area that's being developed now has been sort of a wasteland of parking lots for 30 years. And the question is, who's going to come in and build, you know, single family homes there, or, you know, dense housing there for people, maybe even a supermarket that will really serve the neighborhood? The city says, we need to have some sort of big thing that goes right there that is entirely different than all that. I guess I'm just wondering how you view that change of this area from something that we've all thought of as an abandoned part of the north end of Hartford to an extension of downtown that has all new rules with it.
I think that to Sarah's point as well, that about zoning and how you characterize an area, zoning has been a difficult thing for me to understand personally. I'm not very spatially oriented, and so I've kind of, you know, zoning was something that I didn't really understand until very recently, and it finally struck me as I was going up I-91 with a friend. We were driving up I-91, and I looked to the left and saw the landfill, the covered over landfill, and I looked to the right and I saw the adult entertainment district. And it occurred to me that these things are across from each other on the highway, and that these things are placed in this area for a reason, and that's what zoning is, right? The idea that certain things are placed in certain places relative to each other. And so the idea that we consider this area, whether you consider this area part of downtown, and it gets zoned that way as being relative to downtown and relative to a high density area versus is it part of the north of the North End? Is it, you know, zoned relative to a low density area? And I've thought of the moniker Dono as absurd, but, you know, in terms of zoning, that is an important question. How do we zone this area? And so now, if it makes it easier to put dense housing in this area by making it as part of downtown zoning, I'm all for that. Just is that dense housing going to be available to people who are going to people in the North End, people in the South End, people even in the West End? Because the West End isn't always just a bunch of well-off people. There are people there too. Is that dense housing, however it's zoned, going to be available to people who need the housing? Is it going to be available to people who have lived in Hartford, who maybe live in Bloomfield, East Hartford? Are we drawing from Simsbury, Avon, you know, Glastonbury? Where are we drawing from for whatever this – however this place is zoned?
Well, we need to take a break, and we're going to talk more about something very specific around housing, and it's how many people can live in a house and what really constitutes a family. That's one of the questions we'll ask. We'll also take some more of your questions about planning and zoning. I want to thank Tom Deller, who's the Director of Development for the City of Hartford, for joining us on the phone for a few minutes. You can call us in at 860-275-7266 or tweet us at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, our state's current election system, which employs two, sometimes more, partisan elected registrars in each town, has been sharply criticized since big election problems in Bridgeport and Hartford over the past few years. Now the state's top election official says it's time for a change. So we'll take a look at refreshing an antique election law. That's coming up on Monday's show. We're talking about zoning and planning in the state. Be sure to tune into CTN shortly after the program for a Planning and Zoning Development Committee public hearing. It starts at 10:30. We understand they'll be talking about changes to tax increment financing. Doesn't that sound like fun? Yeah, tune in CTN for more on planning and zoning coming up later today. I also want to say, by the way, on Tuesday night here at our Hartford studios, we're going to be talking about elementary education. We're going to be doing the second in our series of very successful Where We Teach panels, where we bring in teachers in the evening to talk about the work that they do. We'll be talking about elementary education. If you'd like to join join our panel or be part of the audience there, you can go online to WNPR.org and find out more. Today, as we talk about zoning and planning, we're talking with Fionnuala Darby-Hudgens, who's educational assistant at Three Rivers Community College in New London, who studies zoning law across the state, Sarah Bronin, who's the head of the P&Z Commission in the city of Hartford, Jamil Ragland, who's an office coordinator at Trinity College, a Hartford resident who's been writing about planning and zoning in the town, in the city of Hartford. I want to bring in Peter Goslin, who's an attorney for a family on Scarborough Street that's been in the news. This is an issue that has a lot of us thinking about zoning. And Peter, welcome to the show. First of all, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
I'm wondering if you can just describe again this story for us. Essentially, we have a bunch of people, most of whom are unrelated, living in one big mansion on a very tony street in the west end of Hartford. It's raised a lot of issues around what makes a family, at least in the city of Hartford. Tell us where we are right now, Peter.
Well, you know, where we are is that we have eight adults and three children who purchased a house collectively. And through a partnership agreement that they made with each other, pool all of their financial resources, live together, prepare meals together. They participate in helping to raise each other's children, live in every way according to what we would call an extended family. I mean, I don't know about you. I grew up in a family of six kids. You know, our neighborhood was filled with extended families, grandparents, grandchildren, you know, people who weren't really related to you, but they grew up in your household anyway. And that's essentially what, that's essentially what my clients are doing. They've simply made a decision that they wish to pool their resources and live together as a family.
But zoning law essentially says they're not a family. And so what's going to happen next?
That's right. Well, one of the things that the city says presently is that if some of my clients were actually the household servants of my other clients, it'd be perfectly okay. You could have that many people living in the house. That's not really an issue. It's actually a 9-bedroom house. So that would be perfectly all right. But the present zoning regulations say, you know, not for your family. For other families, yeah, it's okay, but not for your family.
So we're now faced
with the possibility of, you know, having to make a legal challenge to that, which, of course, we believe would be successful. But it's kind of unfortunate because, as Sarah said at the beginning of a little bit earlier in the show when I tuned in, she was talking about looking at planning and zoning as planning the city of the future for Hartford. You know, my clients, I feel very strongly, certainly they feel very strongly, are part of the future of Hartford. They reflect a different way of people living together, a way that may not be entirely conventional, but is part of the changing face of American society.
Well, and Sarah, comment on that. So how does this look to the changing face of American society and the changing face of Hartford? It's a really important issue.
Yeah. So let me just say that our commission doesn't have anything to do with the house that Peter represents living arrangement, the group of people that Peter represents. So what we're doing would be totally independent of that, or how we think about our rules would be totally independent of what's happening in that legal dispute. So Peter mentions our current regulations say that only two unrelated people can live together as a family. That's different from most of the cities in Connecticut, which allow four unrelated people to live together. And it's also different than even some of our neighbors. So East Hartford and Wethersfield allow an unlimited number of people to live together. West Hartford says three. Other cities around us directly bordering us say different things. But none say two. And so the question is, one of my biggest priorities as the chair of this commission is to preserve and protect the single family zones. Is there a way to do that would loosen some of the numbers aspect of what makes a family while putting significant restrictions to make sure that people can't claim that they're a family when they're not? And so Peter lists a few things. Collectively on a property interest. They don't pay each other rent. They have a household account. You know, so some of these things can be written into the law to say, you know, we're defining family and we're putting all these explanations on how to do that. So that's one approach.
And when you're talking about this specific family, Fionnuala, it's very easy to say, well, look, the way that they've decided to live together under this one roof may very well constitute a family. The thing that laws like this protect against is things that we've seen in various parts of the state, many, many dozens sometimes of unrelated people coming from outside the country, living in sometimes not terribly great conditions under one roof and people challenging that. What do you see when you take a look at this, given your study of zoning laws statewide?
So in the specific case, in the Scarborough Street case, it is without a doubt the two unrelated person regulation is a class-based exclusionary tool. Hands down, if you could have as many servants or maids or butlers as you want in the house but can't have four adults who come together. I also think in this particular case, there's public school teachers in this house. They are the future of the city of Hartford. And across the state, you see things like this all the time. So one of the – I pulled up some language from different zoning regulations, and one of the language read concerning multifamily development in a relatively tony municipality on the shoreline was the fear that it could produce housing that is beyond the means of or fails to meet the needs of substantial segment of town's families. You see language, discriminatory language like that across all zoning regulations.
Sarah, quickly, if you would, because I want to get to a phone call. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's important, though, that this not be, you know, we have to work together. We all live in a city. Hartford is very diverse. We have a diverse housing stock. Most of our land is zoned to be multifamily and more than single family. So, you know, it's really important to me that we not make this a sort of a class warfare sort of thing. I mean, what we have to do is think about, okay, what are the best practices? How can we incorporate those into Hartford and try not to use some of the damaging rhetoric that I think has been used on this issue in the past?
I want to thank Peter Goslin for joining us. Aaron's in Hartford. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead. What's on your mind regarding zoning?
Hello, John. First and foremost, thank you for having the topic. I think it's an incredibly important topic that affects us all every day. And unfortunately, we rarely think about it until something's being built in our backyards and then we say, oh. So I also wanted to mention, you know, I encourage Sarah and Tom to and continue to improve the zoning laws in the city of Hartford. I think we're at a unique time in our culture where people are moving back to our urban areas. We look to our neighbor in Providence that many people think of as a positive example of what's been done. And one of the things that they have there is smaller lot sizes and less parking requirements, things that encourage density. We're finally starting to invest in our public transportation, and I really hope that the city of Hartford will continue to move along those lines. Lastly, I wanted to just say to Jamil real quick, you know, you mentioned that the city of Hartford is the second poorest city in the country. Well, one of the only ways that we're going to change that is if we continue to change and provide housing stock for people that want to live in urban areas, but quite frankly can't because of the income restrictions on low-income housing. So,
Aaron, thank you for that because we just have a little bit of time. I'd like you to respond quickly, Jamil, because I think it's an important point that I think we were talking about a bit earlier.
Right. So we mentioned gentrification earlier, and it needs to be said that gentrification is a racial issue. We're talking about moving back to urban areas. We're talking about white people moving back to urban areas. And we're talking about investments into public transportation and increased housing opportunity for white people moving back into the city. Once we get this stadium built, once we get to Thomas Hooker Brewery, then we have a situation where we need to improve these situations for people who have dealt with crumbling housing stock, literally poisoned schools, and poor public transportation for decades now. But now that the Back to the City movement is going on now, which is, again, a white movement back into the city that have been traditionally black and Latino and other and black and brown people, now it becomes a situation where, you know, kind of this trickle-down economics type of theory, right? We move all these people back into the city and, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. Well, we'll see if that happens. I'm not hopeful for that. You know, gentrification has the effect of almost always displacing the original communities.
But we just have a few seconds left. But does any investment in the city of Hartford, city of Bridgeport, city of New Haven, does that in some way, though, help? Can it be made to help?
It can be, but it has to be done so very, very carefully. And I think that line of thinking hasn't really been demonstrated here, that there's been that we're going to, you know, bring these people in, but how can we do that and help everybody?
We've run out of time, but I want to thank our guest, Jamil Raglan, who's office coordinator at Trinity College. He's a Hartford resident. Thanks so much for being here. Also, Sarah Bronin, who's the Planning and Zoning Commission chair of the city of Hartford. Fanula Darby Hudgens is an educational assistant at Three Rivers Community College in New London. Our program today was produced by our digital editor, Heather Brandon, along with our executive producer, Katie Talarski. Thanks also to Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan, and Kyone Wolf. Our interns today are Sydney Lauro and Kelsey Bissell. I'm John Dankowski. This is Where We Live.